Welcome again to Cinema Squabble, episode number 19. My name is Adam Gerke. Joining me in studio right now, Brian Zitzelman.
Hey!
You come to us from The Examiner. Yeah, and
wow.
Sarah Michelle Fetters, you come to us from Seattle Gay News, also MovieFreak.com.
And I'm far less caffeinated for once than
I just had water.
Unbelievable.
What did Sprints put in my drink?
It's a red glass. It could be anything.
It could have been anything.
No, I'm so innocent.
It could have been some of that the magic elixir that was in, what was the kidnapping one with Jake Gyllenhaal. Help me out here.
Prisoners. Thank you.
Yeah.
Not a fan.
Oh,
you weird.
So quickly we already. Cinematography was amazing.
Yeah. Oh, that's one part of them.
Hey, so you know what?
Who are we?
What do? We talk about movies in cinema. We are some of Seattle's film critics. We see films every day. We talk about these films in the theater, and now we bring it to you in podcast form so you can get in on the conversation as to what we actually talk about when we're not watching films.
Mm-hmm.
So this week, a number of films that came out this week and also some from last week.
Seattle-wise, one from last week.
Speaking, right. And then also, we've got a very special guest coming up here from the Northwest Film Forum, so we'll get into all of that coming up here just a little bit, which actually brings us to The Visit. That was the first film that we want to talk about. This actually came out last week.
Mm-hmm.
M. Night Shyamalan's return to cinema. Shall we see this as his ascension, basically from The Doghouse?
I'd say it gets him out of The Doghouse. I don't know how far.
Temporarily.
I don't know how far outside of The Doghouse. Yeah, he's still on the chain. He's still on the
chain.
Yeah.
It's not a very long chain.
Right. So,
But a step in the right direction.
So to get people in the premise of what's going on here, two grandkids want to give mom a break because mom is estranged from the grandparents. Right?
The brilliant Catherine Hahn, just to give her a shout out.
And so grandparents volunteer to take in grandkids while mom goes off on a cruise with her boyfriend, and that's the setup. Kids have never met their grandparents before. This is their chance. They're 15 and 13, I think.
That's correct.
And so this is their chance to get to know the grandparents they've never known, and it's going to be exciting. It's going to be a blast.
Well, and young Becca, our 15-year-old, is a burgeoning filmmaker who's mm-hmm. decided she's going to make a documentary about this visit.
Right, and finding history on mom. So
exactly.
this could be a blast. Turns out, Grandma and Grandpa start acting a little weird, and it just goes from there. I think that's the best way to set it up.
Sure, because the less you know, mm-hmm. the better.
The better you know.
This is M. Night Shyamalan back in some very smart, twisty, fun form. Mm-hmm. He's having a good time here. Yes, it's a found footage thriller. Yes.
But is it a found footage thriller? Because it's sort of, I mean, it's a faux documentary.
Yes.
And there are plenty of scenes that we see that aren't actually being shot for the documentary. So we kind of flash in between this.
Yeah. But it does have that same issue that all of these in this genre kind of have for the most part, by and large, in that at a certain point in this film,
mm-hmm.
you want to slap these kids and be like, why are you still filming all of this stuff that is happening to you?
Right.
There's a point where a rational person drops the camera and runs.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. But at the same point, I still think it also, well, you'd have no movie if they did that.
Exactly.
So you've got to have fun.
Yeah. And that is the thing with this movie,
mm-hmm.
is that it is fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really smartly constructed in a lot of ways. It ends up being more about mental illness than it almost does anything else.
Yeah.
But it has sort of this warped Grimm's fairy tale aesthetic to it that's also really charming and really engaging in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. So real quickly, where do you sit on this, Sarah?
I think it's a solid rental.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's got some little issues here and there, but
yeah,
I think it's a strong, strong rental. And again, it's a step back in the right direction for Mr. M. Night.
Yeah, and for me, it was actually a theater. I loved it. I thought this was
a theater.
I had a blast with it, okay. And I said to myself, you know, there's not a lot else that's scary out right now or haunting enough that makes me think this wins.
Well, here's what I will say to just sort of close the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
What I do love about what M. Night has done here is that he does tell it entirely from a young teenage point of view.
Yeah.
And anybody that wants to quibble about some of, you know, oh, I would never do that sort of stuff from a 20, 30, 40-year-old perspective, you have to remember who you were when you were a 13-year-old kid, when you were a 14-year-old kid, when you were a 15-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
What these kids actually do 98% of the time
mm-hmm.
is probably how a, a young teenager would react.
A relatively precocious teenager.
Sure.
One of
but
them.
I mean,
but yeah.
I was, you see what I'm saying?
Dumb. I was very dumb at that age.
See, you would fit in beautifully.
All right. Did they watch Simpsons reruns?
Not quite.
Nah.
No.
Okay,
but,
not quite me.
But there are plenty of references to pop idol icons.
Fair enough.
Throughout the
film. No
as well.
Last Airbender, though.
Yeah. No, not at all.
Is Jaden Smith in this thing?
Yeah, no. That also then brings us to our next film, an apex, if you will. This is Everest. Sarah, set this one up for us.
Well, and so this is one of the bigger films from this weekend. There's probably three.
Sort of.
Yeah, I mean, there's three big releases this weekend.
And they're all kind of biopics, sort of.
Biopic.
I said there's
Say
three
biopic.
Big releases. There's yeah. three. There's three biopics.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the biggest release of the weekend is definitely not a biopic. That's The Maze Runner, which none of you saw.
Well,
we'll see.
But
womp womp.
That's definitely not a biopic. Everest,
Everest, though, is
it's a limited release, but it's being Universal is being really smart about this as far as its limited release is concerned. So Everest recounts the 1996 tragic expedition to take the summit of Everest, mm-hmm. where a lot of people lost their lives after getting to the top. Mm. The majority of them actually do get to the summit, and it's on the way down when a storm strikes, and they just can't make it back. Mm-hmm. And it's a recounting of that tragedy.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much all you need to
know.
Yeah,
and there's no real mystery that this isn't exactly a happy, uplifting film.
No. There's some heroism. There's people persevering. There's people doing things that go above and beyond. There's people sacrificing themselves for others. So, I mean, it's not a happy movie, but it's also not a sad movie. And there is the triumph of the human spirit and all that. Mm. What I was going to say, though, about why Universal is being smart releasing it in this fashion is they are releasing it in the largest formats available.
Going big.
Yeah.
It's IMAX, it's Cinerama, it's 70-millimeter size screens or larger.
Yep. And it's 3D, by the way.
And yeah, 3D. And that is the way to see this movie.
Yeah.
If you are going to go watch this movie, you need to see it in the largest format
not
available.
Not the phone.
This is not
a
phone,
phone
movie.
What
this is
a
not
big phone.
No,
like a Galaxy Success.
Not a big phone movie. Not a big television movie. Not a big anywhere other than a gigantic theater movie.
Yeah.
That said, I'm not sure you should go to the theater and watch it.
Oh.
See, now I'm on the end of the spectrum on this, and I actually do think you need to see this in the theater, like Sarah's saying, and I do think you should go see it. Here's the difference. This film, you're right, it tells a story, but it's not a traditional narrative. What it is, what this film actually is the film.
There is no narrative.
There is no narrative.
That's fine.
It's just,
I'm comfortable with no narrative.
It is purely an experience. And to get that experience, the only way you will get that is in the theater, like Sarah said.
Hmm.
Going to an IMAX, being immersed in the sound. The sound design from this film alone, I think we will see this come Oscar season. This will be one of the sound design films.
Who directed this?
Well, if it's not, it should be one of the sound design films.
Who directed this? I honestly don't. I know the cast is loading. I haven't seen it. So
it's
the weird
it's
one,
directed by Baltasar Kormákur, who did Two Guns, but he's also the Icelandic director that 101 Reykjavik, which a lot of people don't know. If you haven't seen it, you should see it. It's fantastic. His visual sensibilities are perfect for this.
Yeah, the cinematographer on this as well does some just amazing, almost like mind-bending, vertigo-inducing shots. Whose name I can't remember.
Well, it's
on that
Salvatore
as well.
Totino, who
That's
is
one, yes.
Ron Howard's frequent cinematographer. So we have a crackerjack.
Yeah.
I mean, the behind-the-scenes people on this, you know, Mick Oddsley is one of the great Brit editors. The editing is fantastic. The sound design is amazing. Gary Freeman's production design, sensational.
Mm-hmm.
From a technical standpoint, this movie is stunning. And there are elements in here that are jaw-dropping. The problem is you have so many characters, and the movie isn't interested in them. So you'd never really feel anything when the majority of them stop dropping literally like flies off the side of the mountain. There are exceptions, but by and large, they all just sort of disappear into the snow.
Yeah, because they've actually, I mean,
and it's an all-star cast.
And yeah, watching the ads, I mean, they push that, you know, we've got, you know, Gyllenhaal, we got Keira Knightley, we've got Josh Brolin, we've got, I mean, who else is in this thing?
Well, Jason Clarke's the erstwhile star, and he is the best, as far as the acting element is concerned, he's the best thing in the film.
Is there much for them to do?
Well, but he gets
other
the most screen time,
than slowly be cold? And I don't mean that in a negative way, but I mean, you're saying there's not much character, but Adam, you're saying there's a lot of kind of raw emotion just going through life.
And I would say
where's the balance?
There is a lot of character in this. We are getting snippets of these people's lives narrowed down to basically a period of 90 days. Because when you get to Everest, you actually have to acclimate to the mountain. And so we're seeing them go through the process of acclimating. We get to know their personalities. We get to know where they're coming from. We get to know them a little bit.
Bit in the form of melodramatic cliches.
Are these like, but that doesn't bother me. Is this a situation where like someone gets somewhere and then they remember something and there's a flashback?
No.
We don't do any of that. There's none of that. Okay, that's thankfully, good. None of that. Well, I mean, your screenwriters are William Nicholson, who did Gladiator, and Simon Boyfoy, who did Slumdog Millionaire and 127 Hours. They're smart. Smarter than that, they don't need to delve into those kind of mediocrities. But instead, though, they just offer up platitudes as far as how they develop these characters. The exception really is Jason Clarke as Rob Hall, who is the lead guide for one of the two expeditions that's going up the mountain. They really do a great job developing that character. And Clark is fantastic in the film. I also think John Hawks, who is a postal worker, who has his own reasons for wanting to get to the summit, I think he makes the most out of very, very little. The script doesn't give him a lot, but what he does with it, I think, is kind of magical at times.
Yeah, no, you really are cheering for him.
The flip side is Gyllenhaal disappears in this movie.
Yeah, that is kind of strange.
And he's the secondary guide, and he's also this, you know, he's a big, he's also Seattle, he was from Seattle. You know, he introduced mountain adventuring to the Seattle area. It's his company is still in existence, still goes up Mount Everest.
Mountain Madness.
And he really just vanishes in the film. I mean, he's got a cool beard and some good abs.
All right. Yeah.
But that's really...
Any Sherpas?
You get plenty of Sherpas, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, except that they don't really do anything. And
but I think but the Russian
not,
sets
they
it up.
They do all the work, Sarah.
I know.
The Russian sets it up for him really well, though, in this, which I kind of...
The Russian?
There's a Russian. He's one of the sort of expedition leaders.
Yeah.
And he sets it up best. And I think it kind of lays the rest of the foundation as to why we don't see a lot of the character development. It's because the mountain has the last say. That is basically... And he's
how
right.
How Herzogian of you.
Right. Well, the mountain... I mean... You can come out here, you can do this, but the mountain has the last say. And so you're basically he's saying you are all insignificant in comparison to the mountain. And that's really kind of how all the characters are then treated.
Because nobody has ever said that from the time of Mallory. And
well,
can I ask one more thing before we wrap up?
One more. Yeah.
Have either of you seen Meru? Meru? Maru?
Meru?
Oh, Maru.
Yeah.
Have you seen that,
yes,
Sarah?
Yes, it's fantastic.
If you could see one of the two.
Meru.
And that's the documentary about a crew of people who are climbing a different part of the Himalayas. That's
But I would say the same thing about The Summit, which was the documentary from a couple of years ago about the people that died on K2. I think that's a better film.
Not everybody, but there is an option to see one of those two right now.
Well, yeah, in a theater, I would see Meru.
Okay.
This movie is visually spectacular, and you know, I as much as I wish the script were better, Adam isn't wrong. What Cormacore does as far as making the mountain its own character is extraordinary. So that's why I'm really on this waffle line of how badly do I think people need to see the film.
All right, can I throw a twist in? Mm. Adam. Mm. Theater, rent, or skip?
Theater.
Since you usually go last.
Okay. Theater.
And Sarah?
It's a mild theater only if you see it in the largest format possible.
So you have to pay extra to
pay extra to see a mediocre scripted movie.
Mm-hmm.
Fair.
But it's an experience. It's not a narrative. It is an experience. That's my bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
I think you've sold me this. Yeah. I think you might see this thing.
Tell us what you saw, Brian.
We all saw Pawn Sacrifice last night, and that one's pretty basic. So it's the Bobby Fischer story. They've searched for him. They found him.
Who is Bobby Fischer?
Bobby Fischer is the maybe only, I don't know, the famous chess player from America, particularly in the 20th century during the Cold War. Rose to prominence in the 60s, 70s, and famously played against the top players in the world, who were the Russians, the USSR. And Bobby had some issues, we'll say. A little paranoid schizophrenia, hate of Jewish people, even though he's Jewish himself. Lots of problems, but very talented. And the movie...
And it's basically about his fight against Boris Spassky.
It's about that, and it's about how this man is kind of stretched to be an icon, and people in the media make him out to be, you know, an underdog. Just some kid from Brooklyn taking on the big bad Ruskies.
Mm-hmm.
And how you can make that message, but underneath... None of that's necessarily accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And we got Tobey Maguire, who I feel like has not been around as much. I know his filmography is a little light, but I feel like this is the first real thing we've had from him since...
In a while.
Brothers with Gyllenhaal, yeah. Right? I mean, that was 09?
Well, that people are going to sit there and go, that they're going to sit back up in their seat and go, oh yeah, he really is one of our great young actors and, working right now.
And he really is excellent in this. Uh-huh. I mean, McGuire's kind of lost everything. You know, feels like people don't talk about him. He's not in stuff. He's really good as Fisher. He plays up the schizophrenia, the kind of
paranoia.
The paranoia.
Everything.
Just like the insanity that goes through this guy. He just goes on these rants. Like example is he's trying to set up this big fight with, not fight, but he's got this Icelandic duel with the number one player in the world for the world championship. And he has all these demands. They meet him on his way, skips out on him. They get there, the match starts. He wants to pull out again. So he's always self-sabotaging. And the movie, I think the middle hour of this movie is especially good. The setup doesn't always work. The ending, I'm not sure, entirely works. But I think it's an interesting movie with some really good performances. Adam, where did you fall on this one?
I'm not going to disagree with you on the performances. My concern was actually in the scripting of Bobby Fischer, because we see a lot of people's observations of what he was like and what apparently... I mean, we can... Look... I know what paranoid schizophrenia looks like. I have lived through it with family members who have dealt with this. I know what this is like, and he's nailing it. He's doing it. What we don't get a sense of, though, from this film, which kind of was when I thought about it more, was we're not getting a real sense of what makes him tick or where he really developed this from. We're seeing more of his psychosis. We get a little bit, you learn from this chess master, and it's almost done in a montage.
I wouldn't necessarily agree with that, because I think the film does a fairly good job of showing how genius and madness coexist. I mean, Spassky is also, you get hints throughout that Spassky is on the verge of that sort of similar psychosis.
Who's played by Schreiber. Liev Schreiber. Terrific in this.
Fantastic.
But I'm not getting the sense that we understand what makes him tick.
Which kind of brings me to my problem, which is the opening. Not that the opening is innately bad, but you start with him as a kid and then as a teenager and his first, you know, learnings of the game and playing against like real chess masters, which is fine. But it does seem like he goes from nice little kid who really is intense about chess to... self-hating, hates everybody. And it does seem to shift just quick enough that I almost wish we would have just started with him already as a teenager, already as kind of a schizo.
But you do get the feeling that screenwriter Stephen Knight, who did Dirty Pretty Things and wrote and directed Locke from last year, which was one of our favorites, and director Edward Zwick, who has made some extraordinary movies, like Courage Under Fire and Glory, and some really horrible movies, like Leaving Normal and Legends of the Fall. You get the feeling that the stuff that they are most interested in is that middle hour where Fisher is coming into his own, but also falling the most apart, and how the people next to him are relating to that. Most notably, Peter Sarsgaard as Father Bill Lombardi, who is another American chess master who knows he's nowhere near the level, but it seems to be the only one that's able to communicate with.
Yeah, he's sort of he's assigned Fisher as the handler. Yeah.
And it's great. I love the little scenes of him, you know, handling him basically. So when Bobby gets too out of control, the way to calm him down is to just start a match.
Yep,
rook three to whatever. And I think for the most part, maybe not the ending, it totally handles it, but it does not really talk down the chess. But just lets it happen. They just say, rook to whatever, this to this. Mm-hmm. You know, and other than the ending where there's the big final match with Spassky and you have maybe a few too many cutaways of someone going, oh, what's he doing? Mm-hmm. What move is that? Why is he doing that? And I'm
this
like, just kind of let
Sicilian
it.
Open. Okay, this is the infusation.
Yeah, I know. And it's nice in a way that they don't go, oh, well, here's what the Sicilian thing is. But another way, it's like, guys, that's... I get it. Okay, you can hold back from making every comment about every move.
But for those that do know, and... You know, I know virtually nothing about chess other than I've played it and I'm kind of horrible at it. But people that do know the Spassky Fisher story, Game 6 is the greatest game of chess ever.
Yeah.
Liev Schreiber's reactions to Tobey Maguire's movements.
Right.
Art.
Love Schreiber.
Phenomenal.
And Schreiber
really good.
Relatively like has maybe three lines of dialogue practically in the whole film. And so it's all on his face. It's all on his body.
Oh, yeah.
He's able to convey that so effectively. So where do we sit on this? Theater, rent, skip, Brian?
I've been thinking about this all day.
Mm-hmm.
I will go theater.
Okay.
I will go theater on this.
And Sarah?
I'm a mild theater because the performances are just too good to miss.
Nah.
I mean, and you, if it stays a perceived weak year for actors, and I'm not saying it is a weak year for actors. It's just perceived that way right now. If it stays a perceived weak year for actors, Tobey Maguire could be an Oscar nominee.
Okay, yeah. And I'm with you on that theater as well, soft theater too. So three soft theaters coming from the squabblers on Pawn Sacrifice. How about that? Sleeping with other people. Here's something funny.
I didn't see it. I don't know.
I know.
Is it funny?
It is
funny.
As a matter of fact. Sarah,
it's really funny.
Tell us about this.
Sleeping with Other People is the new film from Leslie Headland, who made Bachelorette, who wrote and directed Bachelorette a couple years ago.
Oh, really? I'm a fan.
It features Alison Brie and Jason Sudeikis, and it's basically a modern-day riff on When Harry Met Sally.
Mm-hmm.
Almost the exact same film in a lot of ways.
Yeah, there are a lot of parallels to
it there. The flip side is that, in this case, it's about it begins with them in college, much like When Harry Met Sally did, but they get the sex out of the way
right
at the beginning.
The bat. Yeah.
They lose their virginity to one another.
Oh, really?
And then
yeah.
Okay. They spend basically the next 12 years of their lives
not even talking to one another,
and they meet each other in a Sexaholics Anonymous
yep.
meeting, and they're both trying to get themselves back on the straight and narrow to appease
monogamy
their, you know, and then they realize, well, this isn't working out for us, so they start hanging out and they become friends, and it takes off from there.
Yeah, I mean, it's another movie that riffs on the adage that can men and women be friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they even bring it up in the film.
Yeah.
Which again is a bit too much of a When Harry Met Sally parallel there, when somebody actually says, ooh, can men and women actually be friends?
I love this. Can I ask, so Jason Sudeikis is in this.
Uh-huh.
Is this more of the, so there's two types of Jason Sudeikis. There's the kind of big, brash, horrible bosses, you know, that piece of crap Hall Pass one.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the funny but sweet Jason Sudeikis like you'd get from like 30 Rock.
You're going to have to add a third level.
There's a third one.
Yeah.
What's the third one?
Well,
the surprisingly deep, dramatic actor
yeah.
who has a few really wonderful moments
okay.
that you do not see coming.
There we go.
Yeah. But he still has his wicked sense of humor to him.
Yep.
So his sense of timing, delivery, and their chemistry, I think,
is fantastic.
It works really well. And then later in the film, we meet him up with Amanda Peet.
Yeah, who's also wonderful.
Their chemistry also
horribly
works.
Underwritten character, though.
Yeah, she's not given enough screen time or enough to do in this, I'm afraid. But Jason and both of these, I'll call them sort of leading women, but Amanda's really more the secondary on this. But
let's talk about Alison Brie.
And
in my opinion, Alison Brie, there have been three great female comedic performances this year that aren't just comedic performances. They're great performances, period.
Yeah.
Alison Brie delivers one of the best performances I've seen this year,
yeah.
right alongside
She's
Melissa McCarthy
good.
In Spy and right along Amy Schumer in Trainwreck.
Yeah.
She is at their level. This isn't just funny business. This is a deep, profound, complex, interesting character who's going through a lot of tough stuff,
yeah.
and how she reacts to Adam Scott, who plays sort of the love of her life that she can't get over, how she reacts to this blossoming friendship with Jake, played by Jason Sudeikis. She's extraordinary in this movie. This movie would not be anything without her.
Yeah. And again, but then I'll still just fall back to, it all comes down to, once again, chemistry between, I'd say, all three of these. So, Sarah, where are you sitting on this real quick?
It's
tough week for Sarah.
here's the deal.
Jeezy crazy.
The ending is bad.
Yeah.
The ending is bad.
Adam, are you saying the ending's not bad or the ending's
it's
good?
The ending sells itself short.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, where are we at?
It is a strong, strong, strong rental. Almost a theater.
I'd back her on that.
Okay.
Same. Yeah. So two strong rentals on that.
It up.
Brings us to the deep, heavy Black Mass.
The unofficial maybe kickoff to
Oscar season.
Uh-huh.
It kicks off in the most Oscar-y way possible with really a great performance in a mediocre movie.
Mm.
We'll just start from right there. So Black Mass is Johnny Depp's resurgence, if you want to say that. You know, that he hasn't had box office success here and there, but critically, I think he's been panned of late.
Huh?
And this is him playing the infamous mobster Whitey Bulger from Boston, Massachusetts, who worked
Stealthy.
With It's from Southie. I'm not going to do the accents. I know that's Adam's game. I do the singing. And it's just how it's not how he came to be. He's already in power as we begin Black Mass, and it's him aligning with this gentleman named John Connolly, who's played by Joel Edgerton. And John Connolly works for the FBI, and he knew Whitey growing up.
Yep.
They weren't friends, but they were from this. They're both from Southeast, from the same neighborhood, that kind of stuff. And they knew of each other and ran in similar parts, and had an incident where Whitey helped John. They kind of always remembered.
Mm-hmm. You pay those debts. If you're from Southie, you pay those debts.
And basically he's like, well, I will work with, he proposes, how about I work with you and you help me take out the bigger fish?
Mm-hmm. The Casa Nostra.
Yeah.
The Italian mob.
The Italian mob. You can't like the Italians if you're from Southie.
Mm-mm.
And it's about their growing relationship and Whitey's ascension into mobness and John's ascent up the FBI. And Depp is sensational. If you've seen the ads for this, I think you almost get a wrong sense of what this is because it looks like Nosferatu.
Yeah.
He's got these big blue eyes, and it almost looks campy. It almost looks like he's just evil personified. And I wouldn't say it's necessarily a nuanced performance, but it is not just vengeance, not just viciousness. You know, there's, I guess you could almost say a heart there. You know, there's a method to it. There's a great scene he has with Dakota Johnson over some troubles they have with their kids. And there's real humor to it, and a great scene he's got with Juno Temple, who's this woman who's just come out of jail, is clearly ignorant
related
of the
to
fact.
Related to his best friend and closest confidant.
Right.
And there's great scenes, but for me, and you two can tell me if you think I'm wrong, the John Connolly stuff doesn't quite work. And it's not that Edgerton's
bad.
Edgerton's not bad. Edgerton just has...
He just doesn't have anything to do.
Anything to do. And then you start seeing the other stuff they kind of add on. There's stuff with Benedict Cumberbatch as a state senator who is Whitey's brother, who's this big-time politician. And they talk about how he's a big politician, but they just kind of talk about it. And it doesn't really become ingrained in the story.
Yeah.
Well,
so you have half of a really awesome movie and half of a movie that just kind of meanders along.
Here's, for me, the main problem. This movie is about James Whitey Bulger, right?
Half. It's a two-hander.
But he's not the main character in his own movie. I would say the primary character, in a lot of ways, is the FBI agent played by John Connolly.
Yeah.
Except the problem is, nobody has written that character well enough that you care about that character.
Yeah.
He has nothing to play.
He feels like an amalgam of multiple people, except he's not.
Except he's not. He's just a total empty vessel at the heart of this film, around which almost everything revolves, and you keep waiting for Whitey to show back up again to give you some sense of energy, of scope, of size, of importance.
Yeah.
And then there's all of these great supporting actors who pop up time and time again for 2 seconds and have nothing to do.
And that's kind of how I saw it too. It was like you have the culmination of weight in the ensemble. Ugh. But when you actually break them apart into their bits and pieces, it's like a featherweight of each. As their parts, no good.
And the narrative tries to set it up almost like they all have their little points, because the framing device is sort of, you see multiple people after they've been arrested talking about like their relationship to Whitey. So you get like the cut to Rory Cochran. You get the cut to Jesse Plemons. But
and there's for me the exception, though. Rory Cochran, I think, is
great.
Rory Cochran is fabulous.
And
if anything,
Rory Cochran, you know, kind of never really came to fame, but he was in Dazed and Confused, Empire Records, kind of been like a character actor in and out. He was in Argo. It's a shame. They have this poster with like 19 people on it. Rory Cochran is probably the best supporting character in the movie.
Without a doubt.
And it's a shame that he's kind of being overlooked for all this other really good stuff.
Yeah. Specifically, also, I thought this kind of had signposts of Whitey Bulger's life in it, but we don't really see a lot of the turning points. It's like he loses his kid. He loses his mom. He gets to be... The big baddie that he is now. But we've kind of lost a lot of the steps along the way. And I think he's a more interesting person than they give him credit.
As procedures go, if Black Mass wanted to be Zodiac, if it wanted to be all the President's Men, it lacks the emotional decrepitude that those films understood and embraced.
Mm.
If it wants to be this saga of organized crime like The Godfather or Our Most Violent Year, it's too condensed.
Mm-hmm.
It's too much just a bunch of snapshots. It doesn't have the scope, and it doesn't have the observational touch that those classics do.
Yeah. It does get the mood.
It gets the mood
of this movie works.
And And as a performance, if you're just going for a performance, Depp is everything you thought he was going to be and more.
Yeah.
Reminds you why we loved Depp in the first place.
It's Johnny Depp's Iron Lady.
Yeah. So where do you sit on it, Sarah?
Wait, hold on.
No, it is. It's Johnny Depp's Iron Lady. It's a great performance in a mediocre movie.
So where do you sit? Theater rent?
It's a rent for the performance.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rent for the performance from Depp, and I think not just his performance, but there's enough. His scenes are great.
Yep.
And he is great. Rent.
Okay, and I was gonna agree with you on all of that. Except I'm still going to say go see it in the theater. Purely because you want to see these things, you want to be up to speed, go see it in the theater. Okie dokie. So that being said, let's talk a little bit about, you know what, we've got a special guest with us right now. Courtney Sheehan, Program Director of Northwest Film Forum. Courtney, welcome back. You've been here before.
I have, and actually since I was last here, I became Artistic Director of Northwest
Whoa.
Film Forum.
No kidding.
Oh, congratulations.
Bump. So hold on, let me write that down. That's Artistic... Okay, artistic director.
Was not artisanal.
No, yeah.
Okay.
Different.
Look at that. Well, we will update that right away.
Welcome
Straight
back.
Straight away. And you've been far and wide. You've just recently come to us from Toronto, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I just got back yesterday.
How was it?
It was a good year, but overall the programming was a little underwhelming.
Hmm.
Definitely brought some good stuff back that we'll be seeing at the Film Forum in the coming months.
Anything you can talk about?
Well, some stuff we already have booked. The new Jafar Panahi film, Taxi.
Lovely.
The
Can't
new
wait for
Frederick
that.
Frederick Weisland documentary in Jackson Heights. And Guy Madden's new film, The Forbidden Room.
That's superb. Good stuff.
Well, I mean, would it be the Northwest Film Forum if you didn't book a Guy Madden film?
It would not.
Exactly.
How much planning goes into your Toronto trip? I mean, is there a little bit of you get there, you see what the buzz is, or is it just you lock down the screenings ahead of time?
A little bit of both, and okay. I go a little differently than a lot of programmers. I actually go with a press pass,
mm-hmm.
so I get, you know, hit up by contacts for films on that direction. So this time I got to interview the director of a documentary about the Afghanistan Film Archive.
Oh, interesting.
Which is super fascinating.
What are you going to do with that? Come on.
I'll send you the link.
Okay.
Okay, Sarah, you know more about movies than anyone I know. Who's your favorite Afghani director? Can you name one?
They just spring to mind.
I know. He just sprung
sorry.
That on me, though.
I'm sorry.
Give me a moment. I will come
and
up with
And the thing
okay.
about this
you.
Film is that it's all about this archive that's been kind of completely abandoned for decades and is being revived and restored over the course of this documentary. So it's a lot of really old, early 1900s films being discovered for the first time.
Sounds awesome.
Very cool. Also, you've got Local Sightings on deck. Tell us a little bit about this. What's going on?
Yeah, so Local Sightings is the festival of Pacific Northwest films and filmmakers in Seattle. It's been going for 18 years, so we're becoming a legal adult this year.
Right.
And we're celebrating in all kinds of big ways, expanding to also having some screenings at the Grand Illusion Cinema. And we have a whole bunch of awesome special events. It starts with our opening night next Thursday, September 24th at 8 o'clock. With a program called Sprawl to Action. Instead of a feature, we're actually showing a bunch of short films that are all nice. About change in the city of Seattle.
Hmm. Which is very apropos because of the fact that, did you folks realize that just yesterday was Stay Away from Seattle Day?
I thought that was tomorrow.
The 16th.
Well, I made
the
my
16th was Stay Away from Seattle Day.
Says who?
It's the wellness it's a wellness group, and if you do a Google search of this, you will find it, and they've created a great little GIF.
But I'm a transplant, and hey, were you trying to keep me away?
No. You're here now.
Okay.
This goes back to the old timers in town, like who were fans of Emmett Watson, and Emmett Watson at the time was saying, "Californians go home." That was the mantra many, many years ago.
Today on Seattle History 101.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Oh, so we turn the dials back.
Ole mole.
Sorry, local Seattle or local sightings.
Gurky side trip.
Yeah.
Hey, just in answer to your question, and I think this movie actually played at the Film Forum, The Patient Stone, Atiq Ramini?
Perhaps.
I think that
Before
did.
My time.
Oh, come on. Fantastic film. And if you get a chance to watch it, you need to take,
right.
give it a look.
So Afghani director.
Yeah, Atiq Rahimi.
So wow. tell us a little more about local sightings.
Let's get back on point.
On that note, what's your favorite type of pancake? No.
Yeah, so we have 15 feature films. Many of them are premieres 55 short films, and then a whole bunch of special events. One that I'm really excited about is called VOD IRL, and it's something new that we're doing to actually work with instead of against VOD by putting on VOD screenings in the theater. And this is starting out with a very rare screening of Lynn Shelton's first feature, We Go Way Back. And Lynn will be in attendance for the screening.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was going to ask.
Yeah, and I say VOD, but we're actually showing a 35mm print. It just happens to be on the very same day that for the first time the film will be accessible to audiences at home on Fandor, which is an online
Fandor's very good. Yeah, great site.
I just watched the movie sitting next to Lynn like 3 days ago.
Oh, big time. It was very funny. Big time in Sarah.
No, we were watching Suffragette, and she's doing the she did the Q&A with the director, and she just kind of walked in and sat down. It was kind of hysterical.
Wow, Lynn Shelton sightings all over the place.
She's here all over. Wow, well, you know, I'm impressed. she's about ready to start the HBO show too. So her and Megan Griffiths, which I'm sure she'll talk about when she's there with you for local sightings.
And what day is that going to be?
That is September 26th, Saturday at 7 o'clock. And we're actually also about to be announcing that we're going to have a after party hosted at the Cloud Room right across the way. So people who buy tickets can get in on that as well.
Okay. All right. After party time.
I know, right?
Too late for me, but I go to bed early.
You're boring.
Even on Saturday. You know this.
I know.
You know this already.
So you're, but you're also, in addition to local sightings, you're also turning 20. So
yes.
You've made it this far as well. So local sightings going on for 18 years, turning 20, kind of even bigger deal.
Yeah, Northwest Film Forum incorporated exactly 20 years ago this month as Wiggly World Studios, soon to become known as Northwest Film Forum, and we are celebrating in a big way because it's a pretty huge deal to have an independent film center kind of survive and thrive in this way for so long. So we are actually turning the opening night party of local sightings into the 20th anniversary party for the organization, and the way we're going all out with that is turning it into the biggest costume party that our lobby has ever seen, where we're inviting people who come to dress up as any character from any film we've ever shown in the past 20 years. The party itself is free and open to the public after 10 o'clock. And in order to help people figure out what kind of character to dress up as, we actually made a list, and it's available online on the main page of localsightings.org. I also like printed out a copy for you guys just so you could take a gander at it. It's pretty amazing. Yeah,
now, Adam, one of your movies has shown.
Like over 200.
Are you going as your own Mormon self?
I could
you
go.
Could.
I could come as a Mormon zombie because I did appear at the Northwest Film Forum.
I want to go as their Eraserhead baby.
You could be Eraserhead. You could be Annie Hall. You could be Oliver Twist. You could be Abraham Lincoln. I mean, we showed
There's
they
live.
There's
a great list of movies here, but Devil's Cleavage? I don't know this one.
It's a great
I'm sold.
Film.
Yeah. So that's coming up. So 20 years old, big celebration. What was the date on that one again?
That's September 24th, next Thursday.
The program
is at 8 o'clock if you want to see the films, and then the party will be open to the public after 10.
And you mentioned a different website because I'm used to nwfilmforum.org. What's this other site that you've got?
Localsightings.org, but our main website is right at the top there too, so you can find it either
Okay,
way.
So localsightings.org or nwfilmforum.org, and you can get there just as well.
Don't
Very
you
cool.
Fairly famous Seattle DJ showing up to help you do some stuff there for that.
Thank you so much for the shout out to DJ Aaron Rez, who's an amazing, amazing DJ. And let's just say that every year during the Local Sightings opening night party, there's always a surprise. And this year's surprise, I think, might just take the cake for the best ever. And Aaron's going to open that
big
process.
Hype.
So, nice.
Hype.
Really don't want to miss this party. You only turn 20 once as an organization.
Yeah. We don't get a hint or anything.
Nope, you just gotta come.
This is that's
just gotta
all
go,
there is
Sarah. Give me a hard time for going to bed early. You go out. You live like 4 blocks from Northwest Film Forum.
6.
I'm
the one that lives 4, but just to be fair.
No excuses for anybody.
Adam and I have no excuses, to
Mormon
be completely
zombie.
Honest.
Right, yeah.
As the Mormon zombie.
I know, right?
How do you die in that movie? I don't remember.
Oh, it is a gruesome death. There's a machete to the teeth.
And machete kills Kirky.
And my head kind of flops open like Guy Smiley.
Oh, that was right.
And then an animatronic skull does the rest. So I only
what
had
a
to
world.
Act a little bit for that one. Yeah, it was fantastic. The Book of Zombie, you can find it. But
Explains so much about traffic in the morning.
Right? Does it now? So, okay. But Courtney, speaking of horror and the horror genre, or sort of the sci-fi horror genre, there's something that we got an email blast on, and this is Tell us a little bit about this, because we are all stoked about this.
Yeah, so we've been doing this series called Puget Soundtrack, where we invite musicians and bands to choose a film that they want to perform a live score for, which has been so fun. And for example, earlier this year, this band New Axis did Alien, and from that came this guy, Tim Held from Spin Cycle Records. He's doing a live score, or a Puget Soundtrack, as we call it, for Predator on Saturday at 8 o'clock.
But more specifically, you said they re-recorded all the Foley, audio.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Every band that's done one of these has approached it in a really different way, and Tim's the first one to re-record every piece of sound, dialogue, sound effect in a different, in addition to rescoring it. So
come
it's
on,
really going to
get the chopper. Yeah. Get the
old chopper.
John McTiernan's not doing very much right now. Anybody give him a call and tell him he needs to be here for this?
You know.
Well, that's one of the things I love about Northwest Film Forum, because I think from the outside, people kind of see it and almost are intimidated. They see like the Iranian films, they see the French stuff, and they don't realize the amount of not just mainstream, but kind of cultish elements that kind of go into it as well. And I think this is a great example of an experience you're not going to get, even at like a huge Cinerama or, you know, an IMAX kind of thing. There's only one place you're going to get this, and it'll be different.
Yeah, all of these have been completely unique, and it definitely does reflect a direction that I'm trying to take with the programming in general, to make it more accessible, more approachable, but still really substantive in that, you know, this is a wholly original artistic experience that you're not going to have anywhere else.
Well, and it's a once in a lifetime experience. I mean, let's be honest. It's live theater meets cinema.
Yeah, exactly. And there's something about playing in that theater. I mean, the acoustics are amazing because it's a movie theater, but they're kind of especially interesting because there's so much wood, and every musician who's ever played just loves being in that space.
And so that's Predator. What was the date on that again?
That's Saturday the 19th at 8 o'clock.
Okay, excellent.
Go, go, go.
That sounds like a blast.
It will be.
So, very cool. Well, Courtney Sheehan, Artistic Director of the Northwest Film Forum, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also, thank you for listening to us this this fine day, morning, evening, whenever you happen to be checking us out. Again, just in resume, The Visit getting one rental, one theater. Everest getting a theater and then a theater. See it only in the theater if you're seeing it in the biggest theater possible, with the loudest sound and the biggest screen and the biggest 3D retina-burning vision that you can find.
Otherwise, skip it.
There you go. Sleeping with Other People, two rentals. Pawn Sacrifice, three theaters. And Black Mass getting two rentals and one theater overall. Okay. Brian, what you working on?
I got a review up this week for Francois Ozon's new film, The New Girlfriend, which is interesting, mostly good. Not entirely good.
Okay. And Sarah, how about you?
Just reviews again this week of other films that are opening. We've got the Maze Runner Scorch Trials.
Yeah.
I know. Got to get into the Scorch. And then Grandma, Lily Tomlin, going to get an Oscar nomination. I almost guarantee it.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining us. For Sarah Michelle Fetters and Brian Zitzelman and Spritz Arbogast, our producer, I am Adam Gerke. If you get a chance, swing on over to iTunes, give us the thumbs up, the likes, the pluses, whatever the system happens to take. You can also find us at cinemasquabble.com. And thanks much to Squawking Vulture Studios for post-production on this production.